You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Blue Moon.
Hello and welcome to the Man City Show. John Stevenson standing in for Nigel Rothman. So, what did we make of Saturday's game against Notts Forest? And in particular, that red card for Rodri. How costly could that be? And will Calvin Phillips seize this opportunity to prove his worth to Man City after all this time sitting on the bench and being injured? Joining me to discuss that and many other things, fellow Blues Edward Timpson, Joe Doherty and Steve Cox. Welcome to you all. Let me pick off with you, Edward. Saturday, fascinating, fantastic. 15, 20 minutes at the start. What do you make of the game overall?
Well, it certainly wasn't the game that we were expecting after that, those first sort of 30, 35 minutes, particularly with the Rodri red card, this literally 26 seconds, whatever it was, after half time. But I think if we just concentrate on the first 20 minutes or so, I mean, it was electric. It was, exactly the type of City performance that we were wanting to see. There was the fluidity, the pass, the move. We sort of cutting them open really at will during that period, and it was also really encouraging to witness some of the new boys blend so well into that formation and that style of play, and it reaped the rewards with Haaland getting his usual goal. But then, of course, this is the great thing about football: you never quite know what twists and turns are going to happen. Even in a home game at City these days, and the last person you expect, the cool cucumber that is Rodri, never sent off in over 400 games, I'm told. Suddenly, the red mist descended. For what reason, we do not know, but it completely changed the face of the game. Suddenly, we have a back four, our best attacking players, Foden, still working hard, but Alvarez goes off. It was a completely different game, and ultimately, the result is probably what we expected. The manner of it, particularly the second half, wasn't. And the consequences of that sending off, we'll see. I'm sure we'll come onto it.
We will come out into that in more detail than just a tick. But first of all, let's concentrate on that fascinating, fantastic 15, 20 minutes at the start. The first goal, was it 46 or was it 48 passes? Who cares anyway? It was sensational to watch, Joe, wasn't it?
Oh, it was fantastic football. I thought both the two goals, they were actually right down the end. I sit in at the Etihad, and both of them were stunning build-up play. I mean, that first goal, the pass and move, all the passing to lead to the goal was exceptional. But I also thought the second goal was really good, with like the dummy Nunes did and then getting the ball across for Haaland. Really great goals. And I remember looking to the people around me and saying, wow, how good are we? This is incredible. And like you say, when you start a game with not just two quick goals, but two such good goals, which show Man City their absolute best, you know, you are thinking we're in for a bit of an hammer in here. But like you say, like as Edward said, it's a football can change at the toss of a coin, and that's exactly what happened with Rodri's red card. I thought it's a shame because he's not really like that. But you know, maybe the game might have carried on like that way, and we might have seen a bit of a bigger scoreline. But I think ultimately, as long as we've got the result with 10 men in the second half, that's all that matters.
What I loved most of all, Steve, was that pass from Rodri. across to Kyle Walker, who played magnificently, I thought. Then back to Foden for that first goal. I mean, it was after 46, 48 passes. That was exquisite, wasn't it?
I thought it was a perfect pass. And I think not only was Rodri playing exceptionally well, I think Walker seems to be coming into sort of like a twilight. Although you'd think he's in the twilight of his career, he seems to be playing better now than I've ever seen him play in his career. He seems to be playing with a much more mature head on his shoulders, and he seems to react very well in those kind of situations. And he knew exactly where he wanted to put the ball. And for Foden to sweep it home like that, absolutely perfect. You've mentioned about the Rodri sending off, and I certainly noticed sort of in the latter stages of that first half, Gibbs White was hacking at Rodri quite a lot. And I suspect that probably was part of the build-up to what we saw at the beginning of the second half, because, you know, a few times I saw him sort of walking away from collisions, holding the back of his ankle. And I personally blame the ref a little bit for that. Not that I'm into having a pop at refs, but I think after the first or second situation that occurred, it's really up to the ref to take some level of control. And he's either got to have a word with Gibbs White about it, or he's got to give him a yellow card. And I think if you set the tone where, you know, someone can quite comfortably come through the back of someone and clobber the back of their ankle and not sanction them for it, sooner or later, something else is going to happen. It looks like Rodri took it into his own hands. I understand Gibbs White said something rather nasty about his family. It was the kind of...
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Well, let's pursue that. Let's pursue that red card thought for just a minute before we come to other matters. With you, Edward, I mean, you said he's never had a red card before in his career, as far as we know. But in fairness to the referee, he had no option but to send him off, did he?
Well, we know, not just in modern football, but probably in the sort of most recent history of football, if you grab someone by the throat, at least put your hands up to look like you're grabbing their throat, that's only going to lead to one outcome, and that's going to be a sending off. I remember many years ago in a charity match of all matches, someone putting their hands around my throat. They weren't sent off, but maybe that was the nature of the game.
Was it another politician?
Sorry, John?
Was it another politician?
Well, they may be now. They probably qualified for the job, but... No, it was someone who I scythed down slightly. Unfortunately, he took exception to it, but it was a poor tackle. To be fair, I'm not sure it warranted a sort of hands around the throat. And of course, if you do that in front of the TV cameras with VAR, I think they're just going to back up the ref's decision. But I think Steve's point about how it came about, there's maybe some mind games going on. I think that was definitely a Forest tactic to try and rough some of our players up, and they unfortunately they got what they wanted. But any game where there's 10 yellow cards, I think Forrest had 7 of them, plus the red, you've got to look at the way the ref has handled some of those off the ball incidents, some of the pushing, the pulling, the niggles, the chat. And ultimately, yes, Rodri shouldn't have done what he did. But I think the referee certainly didn't help quell some of the climate which that football match is being played in.
Having said all that, Joe, you know, the Forest player went down in instalments, didn't he? I mean, he made a right meal of it. There's no doubt about that. Not just our panel, but many people at the game and after the game questioned the role of the referee, and according to Pep, who the referee lost control of the match. What was your view?
Well, I think there is a school of thought that the ref did lose control of the match and probably should have done a bit more about the about what the Forest tactics were. And obviously, Pep's going to say his class, you know, we need to protect the players more. And he is right to an extent. But as a fan, it's still very frustrating to see, because I think we should know better than that. We know that Forest aren't the only ones either. There are a whole host of clubs up and down the country who, if they're playing us away, that's going to be their tactic. And someone like Rodri should be too clever to call for something like that. I mean, obviously, I didn't know, obviously, what Steve was saying about... Gibbs White said something nasty, and we've seen that sort of thing for years. Obviously, that's what happened to Zidane in that World Cup final, similar incident. But I think City as a club, and Rodri in particular, should be a bit too clever to fall for stuff like that. And whilst you could argue the referee needs to take control a bit more, at the same time, if he's booking Forest players for everything they do, all the tactics like that, we'd be having the same conversation on the other side of the coin. So whilst, you know, you can't argue that being a red, and I think we should have been cleverer than to worry about if the ref had, you know, if the ref had had more control over it. It's not good to see, but I think plenty of faults on Rodri's door as much as Forrest's.
How costly could it be, Steve?
I don't think it's going to be that costly, to be honest with you, John. You know, we've got a strong squad. I appreciate we've got a few injuries at the moment, and it's not really an ideal time to be losing a player of the quality of Rodri. But I think you look at the second half, and whilst it wasn't quite a vintage City performance, we managed to work back to the wall and actually grind out a result in it, I guess. I think the bit we probably will miss with Rodri is the creativity that you certainly saw for that first goal. I think, you know, we haven't really got anybody that's a direct replacement in that position that can actually provide that quality of pass. But then maybe it might be an opportunity for Phillips to get a little bit more game time and a little bit more confidence off the back of it as well. So I think there's opportunities there. Look, I mean, we've got to go to Arsenal, which is always going to be a hard game, but we should have more than enough to give them a really good match. And, you know, they're not exactly ripping up any trees at the moment. So I don't think it's going to be that costly for us. And actually, it probably might be a good time to give Rodri a couple of three games worth of rest, to be fair, and, you know, rotate him a bit.
What's your view? I mean, Arsenal's a big test, isn't it, without Rodri? That's the biggest worry of all, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at last season, I think there was only two or three Premier League matches that Rodri didn't play in. He's played all nine matches this season. So he's the consistent, high-quality performer in that role. And Steve's right, we haven't got anyone who is a like-for-like replacement. But thank God we went into the transfer market before the beginning of the season, brought Nunez in, brought Kovacic in. Hopefully Kovacic will get his fitness back for the next few games, because that could be a new partnership. I suspect one or both of them are going to have to play the majority of those games coming up without Rodri in. And as has been said, you know, this is finally the chance Phillips may have if Pep decides that the few minutes he gave him were good enough for him to now start him, to demonstrate why we bought him and why he gets regular starts for England. But it'd be interesting to see what Pep does with the formation, whether he sticks with the current approach, but with someone playing the Rodri role, potentially Nunez, or whether he changes some of the style, maybe goes for a 4-3-3. Foden's playing exceptionally well. We've got the Doku option. So it creates some nice problems in some ways with the squad that we still have available. But without KDB, without Stones, Bernardo Silva, hopefully he's going to be back, but we're not quite sure of his fitness. It just leaves a small question mark about how in those big games we'll perform away at Arsenal. I think we'll still have enough in the tank and enough ability to fill those gaps, particularly with still the strong defence line that we have and the options we have there. So, a little bit worrying, but I think this is a chance for the rest of the squad to step up and show it's not just about Rodri.
Do you share that optimism, Joe? I mean, and let's talk a little bit about Calvin Phillips. I mean, many people would argue he's not had a very fair crack of the whip. I mean, he's been injured, of course. He's been out the first team through injury. He's also not been given many opportunities. He got 40 minutes or so, by my reckoning, on Saturday. Is he the £40 million player you expected to see? Is he falling short? Does he need more time? What's your view?
I think it's simply that we haven't seen enough of him yet. I think he's been really unlucky that he's come to us at a time, because we did need another holding mid when we bought him with Fernandinho leaving, but he's just come in at a time where Rodri, in my opinion, has gone from being, you know, a very good, solid holding midfielder to one of the best midfielders in the world. He's added a lot to his game. He's, you know, he's added a few goals and assists to his game as well. And like you say, he's the player that you can't really replace like for like. So I think to some of the criticism Phillips has got, but nothing more, in my opinion, than just not being as good as one of the best midfielders in the world, I think is a bit harsh. I'm actually really excited to see what he brings. You know, he was a very good... he's a little of an old-school holding midfielder in the De Jong mould than Rodri is. And I'm genuinely quite interested to see what he brings to the table. And you may even... With games like Wolves and the cup game up in Newcastle on Wednesday, he might even be kind of what we need in a bit of a tough game like that. obviously Arsenal, you ideally want someone like Rodri, because in that sort of game, Arsenal will be a bit more open, and therefore someone like Rodri's passing and creativity, you could punish them a bit more. But no, I'm interested to see what Phillips brings, and this is his chance. And you know, we're probably going to see a very hungry player who's desperate to take this chance and prove that even when Rodri's back, there is a place in the side for him.
Are you, Steve, are you surprised that Phillips has stuck around? Because there were rumours of offers from other clubs, including Liverpool at one stage. Are you surprised he's stuck around?
No, not really. I think he's quite an open and honest guy, and he's always said that he's here for the longer haul rather than the short haul. And we know from history that it takes a bit of bedding in to get into a Pep side. And, you know, we've had numerous examples of players over the last 4 or 5 years where first season not been so great, second season come on a lot better. Mahrez was an example, Grealish is an example. You know, that it's not easy to get the pace and the tempo of the team and get the position right. And Guardiola hasn't come out and criticised him. He may not have played him as much as Rodri, but he hasn't openly come out and criticised him. He's actually said, if anything, that, you know, he's there, he's the right player, he's doing all the right things, he's got his head up, he's getting on with stuff. I think it's a great opportunity for him to kind of show us what he can actually do and get a run in the team, I think.
On the contrary, Edward, Pep, I think today or yesterday at the press conference, was actually praising him for sticking around. And Steve's right. It has taken players like Grealish and others a year or so to settle in. So maybe just give him more time, Edward?
Yeah, I think towards the end of last season, we had a chat on this podcast about what to do with Phillips, and the general consensus was he deserves another season to demonstrate, perhaps in a run in the team, what he is capable of. Because we have seen it. It's not as if he can't do it, and they wouldn't have brought him to the club if they didn't believe that he would add value. And the fact that he apparently had a loan offer that he turned down over the summer suggests that, you know, he does want to fight for a place in the team. He does want to show what he can do on a football pitch. And there have been some glimpses of more recent appearances of him that suggest he's starting now to integrate a little into the Pep way, and particularly around possession and his vision of passing. So I think there's enough potential still there for us to stick with him. And this window of opportunity he's now got, let's see if he's picked. That would be the first test. And then see how he fares. Wolves away, I think, would be a great game for him to try and get control and perhaps get himself a run in the team.
Let's just go back to Saturday's game for a moment or two. Who was your man of the match? For me, it was Foden. Anyone disagree or agree?
Nunes. I thought Nunes was excellent, because especially after Belgrade, where I thought, watching the Belgrade game, my opinion of Nunes was pretty much what Steve was just saying about a few other players. Like, you can see the quality, but is it maybe going to take him a few months to a season to really get on the same wavelength as some of the other players? But Saturday, he looked like he'd been there for years. His positioning, his passing was so good. And given that he was kind of the player, given that when we bought him and Doku, because of recent history, I was kind of a bit more prepared for them to maybe take a while to get into the same wavelength in a way I maybe wasn't with the likes of Kovacic. Both of them to have really impressed me so far. And again, Saturday was no different, but him in particular, his movement and his passing was sublime.
Steve, your man of the match?
Yeah, I would agree with you on Foden. I think very notable performance. I agree with Joe about Nunes. Great performance. I also was a little sad to see Doku go off, actually, and Alvarez, because I thought both of them in that first half had really good games. I mean, Doku, whenever he gets on that pitch now, he seems to be able to take people on. He's not scared to take people on. He's got one hell of a lot of skill, and he's going to give a lot of clubs a big sort of run in this year. And I'm really excited about him, actually, as a player. It goes back to the times when we had Sane on one wing and Sterling on the other, and it's kind of like a different way of approaching those puzzles. But for me, Foden at the moment is really coming out of his shell, and he's having a really great season so far, and long may it continue, because he's one of them.
And before we go to the break, Edward, let's just all three of us think about our favourite close season signing. Would it be Doku? For me, it's Kovacic. What about you, Edward?
I think Doku is a real breath of fresh air, isn't he? And there's a lot. So he's only 21, I think. So huge amount to get excited about. And
terrorised West Ham, didn't he? Terrorised West Ham.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's see more of that.
Kovacic, impressed?
Yeah.
Kovacic. Yeah.
Sorry.
Any Edward first?
Yeah, I mean, until his injury, you couldn't fault his performance. And you wondered when he was becoming a bit of a journeyman at Chelsea, when they were diving down the division, what would happen to him. But he's demonstrated all the reasons why he was coveted in the first place. And he's been sublime for us in the games he's played. And I think we're going to need him.
I have to say, Joe, I'm a big fan of Kovacic. And I watch him playing at City, I think. Why on earth did Chelsea let him go? You?
I agree. I think most of the Chelsea lads I know are saying exactly the same thing. He's the one they really didn't want to lose. He's just, I think he's one of them players as well that you realise when he plays you quite how good he is. He's coming to replace Gundogan. Is he going to have quite the same impact Gundogan has? Probably not. But in terms of just having a very intelligent midfielder who fits the style of play without a great deal of training or transition, to get him for 30 million was an excellent bit of business.
Was indeed. And final word, Steve, on Kovacic?
Yeah, I like him. He holds the ball and carries the ball really, really well. And actually, both him and Nunes seem to have that skill knocked off. And, you know, amazing value at 30 million for a player of that quality. I think the only player we've had in the last couple of years that I would say is better value was Akanji. You know, for 16 million when we bought him. We seem incredible to find deal. Really good value players at the moment. It's
incredible deal. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be asking how we're going to go on against Newcastle. And also, here's a thought for you. Are City the new Invincibles? I'll carry on, Leon. Welcome back to the Man City Show. John Stapleton standing in for Nigel Rothband. Well, we've got Newcastle United next. And after their 8-0 whopping of Sheffield United, what does that game hold in prospect? The Carabao Cup game, of course. What sort of team should we play? Should we give in? Should we just field the kids? Give it away? What do you think? Steve Cox, first of all.
I don't think we should give it away. I don't think we ever give any game away. But I think it's a good opportunity to rest some of the more senior players and allow some of the youngsters to get a bit of game time. I think we're a little bit threadbare at the moment. We do not, despite what certain parts of the media actually say about us, we do not lavish large amounts of money on huge squads. We don't have a huge squad. We've actually got a relatively small and compact squad, and we don't tend to rotate as much as some other teams do. So I think it gives us an opportunity. It's not really a cup competition that I'm particularly interested in anymore. We've won it enough in the last few years to make it one of those things that it's not really top of our priority list. You know, I think this year potentially going one better and going for a quadruple would sort of be great, but I don't think it really stands out in my mind as being something that is particularly important. Newcastle's quite a tough draw away from home. Be interesting to see whether they rotate as well on the back of that.
Edward, Pep indicated in a press conference that he might rest a few people. He's joked that if his back gets better, he might even play himself for a few minutes. What are your thoughts on the sort of team we should field? Do we take this seriously or give the kids a chance?
I think we'll still take it seriously, but with a sort of a modicum of realism that it's a long, long season. This is a tough game away at Newcastle, who, as you say, come off the back of a stonking thrashing of Sheffield United. So, I mean, I expect some changes. Ortega, I think we'll see in goal. Lewis, I think it would be good to see him. Phillips, we've been talking about, be amazed not to see him start. Gomez will probably get another go on the left, and maybe someone like Bob could come on either at the start or later on. He's quite an exciting talent as well. So, but around that, you've still got players who, some who are coming back from injury, who might want to better get more some game time. Grealish, for example, and it makes sense to give one or two of the big players a bit of time off with such a heavy schedule of really quite tough matches coming up, Wolves, Arsenal, and then Brighton after that. So it'll, I think it'll be a mixed team where I think both teams will probably be, I'll be completely wrong now, John, but be probably a little bit cagey on the night, not wanting to lose even more players to the medical team. So I think we'll have a good go, but I wouldn't be surprised if we come out on the wrong side of the result, that Pep will move on quite quickly.
Joe, what would be your team for St James's Park?
Yeah, I pretty much agree with Edwin, actually. I think you want to see a couple of the big names who are coming back, like Grealish, get a go, and I would like to see a few of the... I thought Gomez actually looked quite good against Belgrade, so I'd be interested to see him. I think we've also got to remember, Newcastle are probably going to rotate quite a lot as well. Like, this season, they want to get... You know, they've probably clocked the likes of Chelsea and United dropping off and think they've got a very good chance of getting in the top four, as long as they... But they are going to have to compete with the likes of Arsenal, Tottenham, Liverpool, and they're in the Champions League now. And I think they've got a very difficult route. So I wouldn't be surprised if they were quite happy to kind of put out a weak side, maybe lose to us and say, well, there's no shame in that. It's City. We didn't play the first 11, etc. So to be honest, I think there's quite a good chance, even if we do rotate quite a lot and give some of the likes of Phillips and Gomez a game, that I think Newcastle may do us a couple of favours.
Who do you think we should fear the most for this title chase? Let's kick off with Steve. I would say Liverpool at the moment, the way things stand, just 2 points behind us, but of course Arsenal are still there, Spurs are still there. Who do you fear the most, Steve?
Liverpool have reinvented themselves a bit this year and gone to sort of like Klopp's team Mark II, really. Looking at the way they've started the season, they're getting results in games where they're going behind, which means they've got a bit of fight and a bit more press in them. I think they're a lot more dangerous than Arsenal at the moment. Brighton are the other team that I kind of think are really, really good at the moment. They play a very similar style to us. They're getting some really good results this year. And, you know, they're only a couple of points off us, really. So I would say Liverpool and Brighton are the two that I kind of fear the most. I think Arsenal and Spurs will probably do a choky thing at some point later in the season. But I think Brighton and Liverpool will be snapping at our heels for the rest of the season.
Edward, who do you fear the most?
Well, I mean, Liverpool are looking completely different side from last season, where they tanked compared with the previous three or four seasons. I think, in my view, they missed Diaz out on the left. He's a player I would have coveted for City if we'd not found anyone else in that role. And they're just playing more solid, intelligent football compared with last season. So I think, as things stand, they are the most likely challenges, but we're so early on in the season, so much more can happen. Outside of Arsenal, Spurs, Brighton, I can't see anyone sustaining it for the whole 38 games. Particularly looking at some of the squads that they're carrying with them. Arsenal still have got a lot of what they had last season, but we saw against the game against Spurs at the weekend that maybe they're not going to get those late wins as they were last time out. So Liverpool, as we are, but I think the only people who can stop us winning are ourselves, and we just need to keep going.
Well, I'll come to that in just a tick. But Joe, first of all, the team you fear most for the title, Premiership title.
I think Liverpool, obviously you can't write Liverpool off. They've been really grinding out results this season, which maybe a couple of years ago they were a lot more emphatic in how they were winning games. But there is a real sort of backs against the wall quality to them this season that's impressed me. I've been really impressed with Tottenham, I've got to say. And I thought if we were going to get a good measure of how good they were going to be this season with how they get on in the derby, the Tottenham of the last few years, maybe it just feels more dramatic about poor Tottenham were last season, but the Tottenham of the last few years do not come from behind twice in a derby away to get a point. And I have to say, I'm a very big fan of that manager of theirs, that Posh, I'm not going to say so, Angie. I think he's a class act, and he's a really intelligent manager with how he gets his teams to play. So I really wouldn't write Tottenham off this season.
Now, here's a thought. I learned the other day that he's actually managed two teams managed by our club. I didn't realise. One in Australia, one somewhere else. Potential successor to Pep? Anybody?
Yes, 100%. I'd love that.
You're that impressed, Steve?
Yeah, he's a really good. He's a really good manager. He's got a very matter-of-fact way about him, which is a very Australian kind of way. But he seems to handle himself really well. He's got a great sense of humour, probably a little bit more humorous than Pep. But he plays a really nice style of football. Him and De Zerbi, De Zerbi, the Brighton manager, excellent manager. Really has sort of taken something that is not quite the sum of its parts and made it more than the sum of its parts.
Edwin?
Well, finally, Spurs have, whether by accident or by design, have actually come across a really great manager. He's motivated the players. He's got a great system going.
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing that none of us, despite the billions of pounds that they've thrown at the club, have mentioned Chelsea, who seem to be now repeating their problems of last season. I just think it's just quite phenomenal that spending spree has resulted in them going even lower in the division. They're just not a challenger anymore, and long may it continue.
Now, here's a poser for you, and I'm quite serious about this. We're doing far better than we normally do at this stage in the season. We're unbeaten. We normally start slowly and catch up, don't we? Here's a poser for you. Could we be the new Invincibles? Remember the Arsenal team of 2003-2004, 38 league games without a single defeat. Could City do the same this year? Joe?
No, we've got Anfield away and Tottenham away, and I never go into either game optimistic. But like, in all seriousness, it's one of them. I never go into any game these days expecting anything other than a win, because I think we are capable of beating anyone. But over 38 games, I just can't see it happening. You just think, whether it's a Liverpool or a Tottenham give us a good game and are just the better team on the day, or we have some stupid game like the Brentford one, or of course, and it pains me to say it, but you never can call the derby, can you? You know, United could be as crap as we want, but they'll turn up against us, no doubt. So, no, not for me. It'd be amazing. It'd be the next thing to tick off and say we've done after the treble win, but I just can't see it, to be honest.
Steve, am I putting the commentator's curse on our club by even suggesting it?
Yeah, I think you should shut up now, John. quite frankly, I have to agree with Joe. Statistically, over a long season like that, it's going to be really hard to stay as active as we would like to be in four competitions and go unbeaten in the league. I mean, there are some really tough games to go to. The Emirates, White Hart, Spurs Stadium, whatever they want to call it.
Well, we've never scored a goal.
And Anfield. Yeah, exactly. We've never scored a goal there. Yeah, and even Pep was joking about that, wasn't he? He said, what would you really want from your team? And he said, well, I'll settle for a goal at Tottenham.
Yeah.
And I think, it's really hard to go unbeaten. I mean, there's a chance that we might not necessarily lose to any of those teams, which would then make them invincible. But I can't see it happening, John. It's too long a season these days, too much football going on, and too quite close together games at times,
Am I being too optimistic, Edward? And if so, what can we achieve? What are your prospects, your thoughts for the season? What can we win?
Well, I don't want to burst your bubble of optimism, John, but I think realistically, we'll still get 90-plus points. I'm confident of that. But we don't draw many games. We tend to either win, or if we are drawing a game, go for the victory, and there'll be the odd game like we've seen in the past. I remember home against Wolves as an example, where we let the opposition then nick a goal at the end. We saw the last season, I think it was Burnley. I'm trying to remember. Someone that Chris Wood was playing for. He's moved around a bit recently. It can't be Burnley because they weren't up with it. But
Forest,
that's the one. Yes, that's right, Forest. So I just think there's too many of those scenarios where it's not going to go our way. And some of the guys said, some of those away matches, our record at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, I think they call it, that very ingenious name, is always a very, very difficult one, particularly this season with the form they've got. So I think we're going to win up to 30 games, whether we managed to block people out for eight draws, I think it's unlikely.
We'll win the league nevertheless. FA Cup?
Yeah, absolutely. Why not?
Why not indeed? Gentlemen, thank you very much indeed for your participation. My thanks, that is, to fellow Blues Edward Timpson, to Joe Doherty, and to Steve Cox. Join us again next time. Bye-bye.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.